Hello and welcome to Guiding Assets, the flagship investment podcast for CFA Institute. I'm Mike Wahlberg, and today I have Dr. Anya Hochberg on the show. Dr. Hochberg is responsible for all multi-asset solutions at Zürcher Kantonalbank's asset management business. Before joining ZKB in 2020, she spent years at Credit Suisse, where she wore many hats, including Global Head of Economics, CIO for Europe and Switzerland, and Global Head of Products and Sales. With rates backed up, soaring debt loads, and uncertain global economic outlook, real estate influx, and equity markets that have largely shrugged it off, I'm looking forward to hearing how you're translating all this in setting asset mix for ZKB's balanced portfolios. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Mike.
Anya, may I call you Anya?
Yes, please do.
Anya, could you describe, first of all, what your role is at ZKB where your research focus is?
Yeah, multi-asset portfolios are a crucial part of what actually Swiss clients look for, both from institutional point of view, so we speak pension funds who have to manage money for their future liabilities, but likewise, it's a core component for what private people look for in order to manage their wealth. And for many of them, it's a one-stop solution where we can make sure that, first of all, we have our investment proposal in line with their strategy, and secondly, that we can actively manage any upcoming opportunities, being it, well, on the positive side or even risk managing in market like this.
So over the last 25 years, and really especially over the last 10, I think you'd agree we've seen a migration away from the traditional 60-40 portfolios, and especially for institutional investors. So what have been the drivers of those changes? And maybe limit your reflections up until, say, the end of 2021, because we'll get to the last 18 to 24 months in a second. So before the current regime set in, what were the drivers there?
Well, first of all, if you look at the long-term trend to a negative interest rate or lower interest rate at the beginning and negative interest rates at the end of that cycle, this has certainly, I would say, brought the attractivity of fixed income instruments to a new low. And likewise, and this is something which is more relevant for the period as of 2022, we have seen increased correlation, so bonds neither offered an interesting value and in addition brand that diversifying in a portfolio as well. This has certainly impacted most of the multi-asset portfolios. Yes, you still have opportunities to manage around your equity quota, and being long equities was most likely the one of the key calls you had to make in a multi-asset portfolio since monetary policy has become so loose. But you're right, things have changed, and we actually would claim that the mixed portfolio, the 60-40, and I would go even one step further and say, well, it's more than 60-40. You have many more instruments which you actually can bring into a mixed asset portfolio, but the general message stays the same. Bonds are back, and therefore the mixed asset portfolios are back.
Yeah, because the return in interest to bonds has been against, you know, an interesting trend there, really, where you had a pilfering away of fixed income allocation, certainly in North America here, and movement into private assets, you know, going out the credit curve. I imagine that similar things were happening there in Switzerland to sort of that search for yield.
Yeah, absolutely. Being long risk also on the credit side is something which has been a key strategy over here in Switzerland as well. If you look even at the difference between, I would say, a traditional US investor and an European one, you would still notice that the share of fixed income on an average portfolio would be much higher in a European portfolio. So there is, I would say, something more of a certain risk aversion taking place. And this is, of course, something which has made the work in multi-asset portfolios even more difficult over the past.
I had a question for you as well. Here in Canada, we have traditionally had a pretty high, you know, home country bias. A lot of my old institutional clients used to have, say, 30% of their overall portfolio would be in Canadian equities, for example, which would be, you know, say half of their equity allocation when Canada was sort of 2-3% of the global markets. Is that a trend that also persists in Switzerland? And I say that because that trend has been declining in the last sort of 5 to 10 years here, where Canadians have been sort of reallocating their Canadian allocations more into global portfolios.
Yeah, well, this might be a reflection, of course, of globalization in general. And you could now argue what's going to happen in the next couple of years, given that we observe more trend to deglobalization. It may be, I would say, less joint business cycle. I mean, something which, you know, the last couple of years had in common was that you had joint monetary policy, actually almost joint at the hip, if people have hiked or lowered interest rate. This has, of course, influenced the global economic cycle, and therefore maybe the regional allocation has not been as important, and maybe more some of the sectoral aspects have come to the play. However, I would also argue that it very much depends on the I would say, on the country you have a home bias at. If you look at Switzerland, for instance, this is a small but a very open country in terms of the purchasing manager indicators. You could even argue that the PMI in Switzerland is very telling for the global economy because of the large share of import and export in Switzerland. So Switzerland, yes, you could call it a home bias because you have a focus in your home currency. This is another aspect. It's not just about the global business cycle. It's also about currency developments. And if you look at how strongly currencies can move around, having one part of the portfolio where you are not, I would say, depending on foreign currency movement is one of the key aspects of the home portfolio as well.
Okay, let's talk about the last 18 months or so. And I'm cognizant to say it's too simplistic to talk just about higher rates as a global investor, especially one sitting there in Switzerland. These things are all relative, of course, but can you tell me how the new interest rate regime has affected either your strategic or your tactical asset moves for ZKB clients? And maybe before you do that, though, I feel like I should give a quick explainer for folks who don't operate in this part of the business, a quick explanation on the terminology there. So a client's strategic asset mix is what we call, you know, the written down long-term sort of neutral weighting for things like stocks and bonds. And the tactical mix is how a manager like ZKB or Anya might vary from neutral views, that neutral view. So if you like the valuation of bonds versus equities, at a certain point, you might be tactically overweight your strategic mix for bonds and underweight equities, for example. So anyway, sorry about that. I just wanted to sort of provide a quick little explainer in the middle there. But how about it on bonds, though, Anya? Have you been cashing in on those juicy new yields?
Yeah, first of all, many thanks for explaining the strategic allocation, which is not such an easy topic, but you're absolutely right. Given the fact that bonds are back, both with regard to their diversifying effects on a portfolio, but also with regard to yields, you could argue that the share of bonds in your portfolio should actually rise to the max. However, we would argue that it is at the end of the day, it's not just return. What makes a portfolio efficient is the right mix between return and volatility. So actually the risk you're willing to take. And given the current rise in yields, you could say, yeah, the return part is okay. You can really like that. But on the other side, bond volatility has increased extremely as well. So if you take the overall picture, yes, bonds are back. They should have their place in their portfolio. But we have not yet for our strategic allocation brought the bond allocation back to historically unknown regions. We are rather smooth in, you know, making our move up there. Tactically, you could argue that there is room now for, given that we have passed the 5 years, the 5% on the 10-year in the US, that you could tactically add a bit more. But I would really tell our investors that at the end of the day, it's not just the return picture, it's also the volatility. And bond volatility has increased dramatically over the last couple of months.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that we haven't talked about for a long time until the last 2 years, right? This idea that bonds actually have volatility, and you see, you know, all of 2022 with negative bond returns. The last quarter, I think they were down again as well here in Canada. But yeah, I guess looking at it on the overall efficiency perspective, it's not just a slam dunk to lock in those 5% yields and call that your return, you know, your most optimized return basis. I imagine, you know, given where the short end of the curve is as well, even cash is looking pretty good right now.
Well, actually, this is one of the big issues in the fund management industry in general, that if you look at its so-called risk-free rate, which is short-term liquidity, the current, I would say, peak in interest rates has certainly provided almost an additional asset. So far, liquidity has been actually, I would say, just an instrument which is available if you would like to buy any other instrument. So you had to have strategic cash in your portfolio to be prepared in case any opportunity would arise, or you put your investments into cash in case you wouldn't have that many opportunities. In a way, you were just parking money there. These days, it has actually returned as a real source of return here. In some cases, it is already, the interest rate is higher than what you usually have on inflation. So even real interest is back on the agenda. And you really have to think twice of, you know, where to get your return. And therefore, equities compared to the last couple of years are not without any alternatives. And the attractivities of equities, you have to compare them not just with credit or with bonds in general, but especially with a risk-free cash rate. And this explains very much why equities at an equity risk premium of not even 3% do not look yet attractive for us.
Yeah, one of those alternatives, I imagine, is real estate. And I do want to get to that in a second here, but I just wanted to circle back on something you mentioned there about currency, because is a problem somewhat unique to Switzerland, in that this persistent strength of the Swiss franc gives you different things to think about when you're sitting inside the country there. So what's keeping the franc up, and how does that affect your asset allocation decisions?
Yeah, we are really in a unique position where, especially as a global investor, you work out of a currency which continuously has appreciated. Of course, this continuous appreciation of the Swiss franc is a reflection of today's world, is a reflection of increasing conflict, but it's also a reflection of increasing inflation differentials. This has, especially in the last couple of months, shaped, you know, the development of the Swiss franc very, very strongly. Inflation rates in Switzerland have been much lower than they used to be in the US or in Europe. Likewise, you have a political system which is very consensus based. You won't have any harsh or radical political decisions here, and you have almost independent central bank, a central bank that still has to look what the Swiss franc is doing. But everyone could, at least given the inflationary danger, could be of the opinion that the Swiss National Bank is not does not intend to weaken the Swiss franc substantially, because the strength of the Swiss franc was one of the key element in keeping inflation rate low. So therefore, a bet on a stronger Swiss franc for many investors has been a safe bet. And this, of course, has driven the Swiss franc to even lower lows.
Well, if any of our listeners out there were in Switzerland like I was this summer, they could probably attest to the strength of the Swiss franc. I came home feeling a little poorer than I went in, but I did have a good time. That's a beautiful country. So let's go back to real estate there. That's another, you know, theme that keeps reemerging on the show here, partly because guests bring it up and partly because I live in Vancouver, so it's imprinted on my DNA to talk about it. And Vancouverites listening will understand what I mean by that. But what is your view on owning real estate right now and investment portfolios?
Maybe I can bring in the very specific Swiss view at the beginning. Yes, Swiss investors, usually especially on the institutional side, hold quite a large share of real estate in their portfolios. It's approximately 20%. We won actually an annual study on how pension funds in Switzerland are invested here at ZKB, and you can see this is persistently high and has even reached their limits. Nevertheless, we would argue that especially if you are in a market where you have the liquidity, so we speak about the indirect equity market compared to the direct one, where you just buy houses on the indirect side. We have seen that the increase in interest rate has brought valuations down to a degree where we have already decided to step back in, because at the end of the day, for the longer term outlook for real estate, especially in Switzerland, we are convinced that there is substantial demand, not just from pension funds, and there is less offer on the market these days. In general, we also argue across the globe that the strong increase in interest rates has been dampening the demand for real estate, but with the prospect of potential lower rates over the next couple of months, not now, not here, not today, but over the next couple of months, there would be potential renewed interest in a real estate as well.
So by indirect, you mean some version of REITs, like real estate investment trusts, publicly traded securities then on real estate? Is that what you mean, Anya?
Yeah, in Switzerland, we implement our real estate view mainly via fund solutions, which are traded on the exchange. But we could also implement it on a more equity side, behavior with regard to REITs. Here, of course, you have to see that REITs do behave slightly more aggressive in their behavior, not just with regard to interest rate, but also with regard to any kind of equity correction. But we, as we speak, we are in the middle of such an equity correction, which, of course, at some point when we see, you know, the bottom of it, will also bode well then for real estate.
So you had a correction to those publicly traded securities like we did in North America. How well have the private valuations followed in terms of like private real estate funds, for example?
Well, on the private side, you usually have some delay in valuations here, which of course is something which can also bring a very positive impact to your portfolio, as you have a smoothening of the volatility there, as people are actually not forced to really sell into falling markets. So while this is a process that might continue, we would not argue that this is something which, you know, will overly stretch the real estate market.
So I want to change gears for a quick sec here and just talk about passive versus active. So we've seen 15 plus years of flows into passive. What's your view in terms of what the current outlook means for active managers?
Well, actually, I'm one of the passionate active investors, and I do believe, and we call it our three alpha model, that you can add value for your clients within good and, you know, annually reviewed strategic allocation, that you have a tactical allocation which encounters risk and opportunities in the market, and that if you are invested over a longer term horizon, active managers actually can bring value to fore. When we look at more tactical opportunities, so for instance, if you would like to have, I would say, a 3-month view more on a NASDAQ, then of course you might look more for passive instruments than for active one. But I'm personally convinced that what we call the opportunity set in or for active investors has rather increased in market like this. You have more diversion and you have more dispersion, especially in the performance of different stocks, especially, you know, given that what has you know, given us support for all equities before, which is, you know, ultra loose monetary policy, is something, you know, which we see less of. And this, of course, brings more the underlying strength of the equity back into the game of the investor. So we really now not just look for more liquidity and liquidity-driven markets, but we look for markets that are actually driven by earnings, and especially earnings quality.
And are there any other trends that you're seeing or are applying in client multi-asset portfolios?
Well, one trend certainly is for us, and this is high conviction, and I would say even investment philosophy. One is that we are a strong believer of sustainable portfolios to a degree, where we would say it's more than just ESG and just making sure that you have your risk analyzed in a decent way. It's also looking to find out, you know, who actually will profit from the sustainability trend, or who's actually providing solutions to our sustainability challenges. This is something which, you know, we try to integrate in our portfolios, and you can actually do that over a different kind of asset classes. This could be on the bond side, that could be, of course, on the equity side, where you can add the classical, I would say, engagement and stewardship activities as well. And not to forget, you also have opportunities in, I would say, in the private market side, on the private equity side, where you can focus on solutions that actually address sustainability challenges as well.
And I think this has been actually a demand-driven trend as well within Switzerland, right? I think you, when we talked before, you mentioned that this is something that clients are asking for, is more of these sustainable development goals, SDG focused investment solutions.
Yeah, a couple of aspects to that. Certainly, it's demand driven. Clients ask for it. You might even observe a difference between institutional investors, who have still more a bit of a risk focus, compared to private investors, which really like to see the impact of their investment. This is one aspect. The other aspect, of course, is very much the European, and that includes the Swiss regulatory landscape. But by the very same token, for us, it's part of how to create alpha. So it's not just a thematic idea. It's a strong belief that over the medium to longer term, and of course, you can have episodes where that doesn't work. This is, you know, the case with every investment style. But over the longer term, we are convinced that if you pick the right companies, also, you know, including your sustainability analysis, this will be profitable for the portfolio.
Something you're talking about that not many others are is the risk of a Europe in 2011 style debt crisis in the U.S. So we saw last week that the U.S. government's debt payments doubled in fiscal 23 versus 2 years prior. So how sustainable, in your view, is the U.S. debt load, and what factors can push it into crisis mode?
Well, it's our task as part of our fiduciary duty to make sure that we not just look at the opportunities, but also at risk. So this is part of our strategic asset allocation decision to have a matrix of events that have a certain, I would say, probability and a certain impact. The probability of such an event might not be as high, but if it would happen, and this is, you know, the case with tail risk, as always, it would have a severe impact to the broad economy. We have seen, for instance, if you take the example of 2011 of the Eurozone debt crisis, this is something that as soon as it is in the focus of investors can reach a certain, I would say, degree of momentum here as well. And given the fact that we have a strong increase in interest rates in the U.S., the question of how long you can actually, or you are able to finance the debt has come back to the investors' interest. And I would say an additional factor is foreign investors. We have known already over the last couple of years that you see a certain rebalancing on the Chinese side, but given, you know, new monetary policy events also in Japan, you could argue that there's a bit of repatriation also on the Japanese side, also strong holders of US treasuries. And this actually could bring a picture that, you know, people ask for more yield in order to hold US treasuries. And this is certainly an increase in risk premium. I wouldn't call it a spiral that has started yet. This is certainly not the case. And, you can issue money in the strongest or in the world's largest currency, put it that way. This, of course, is very helpful. And you still have, you know, lots of interest, especially at the current level. But the very fact that you have to pay more in order to convince investors to take your debt is certainly something that you have to keep in mind, especially also given the current budget dynamics in the U.S.
So we've come to near the end of our chat today, Anya, and I'll just ask you our traditional two-part question here. What was your first job in the industry? And if you could go back and take yourself for coffee on your first day, what key piece of advice would you offer yourself?
Oh, that's a very difficult one. I mean, if I would take my first job my first day in the industry, I would rather take my first job at all, because I, you know, wanted to spend my business life in academia, actually. I was lecturing economics and financial economics at the University of Wales in the UK. And what advice would I give me? I would tell myself, well, go first into the real world, try to find out how theory works in practice, and then try to teach your students something. That's what I've done now, and maybe I go back at some point to university.
I've been speaking today with Dr. Anya Hochberg, Head of Multi-Asset Solutions at ZKB, who joined me today from Zurich. It was great chatting with you today, Anya. Thanks very much for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
I'm Mike Wahlberg, and this has been Guiding Assets.